and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up, we're going to talk about Amendment 4, and we'll take your phone calls, too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. First, two listener comments that came in after Tuesday's program. Yesterday, I was off, and we were listening to a darn Jamail speech about climate change. But after Tuesday, we had this call about conservatives and also about something that's happening later today in St. Petersburg.
Hi, it's Avrio from Gulfport. What a great show today. I would like to challenge our callers to consider the pain that people are going through as the nation goes through a decline. Conservatives are not idiots. They are in pain. They are being hit the worst, both economically and ideologically. It's easy to demonstrate how they're wrong, hypocritical, or dangerous. Can we stretch to the point of embracing those who need our support and sympathy?
This is Terry in St. Pete, and I just wanted to let everybody know about an event that's happening today. That's Thursday, April 4th. It's at 5:30 in South Straub Park in St. Petersburg. There's going to be a rally demanding full release of the Mueller report. The people have a right to see all the information contained in the report, not just a four-page summary put together by a Trump employee. So we are going to have a rally. We plan on having Mayor Rick Kreisman, Representative Charlie Crist, other local leaders speaking. Hope everybody can come out, 5:30 South Straub Park, and help make democracy work. Thanks.
Couple of listener comments that came in during the last 48 hours. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I plan to talk about Amendment 4 today. Maybe we won't do it because my guest is not here, but let's open up the phone lines and take some phone calls, and we'll talk about some of the issues that are in the news. And we're also going to hear some comments from listeners that came in after last week's show. There was an interesting discussion last week on this show about taxes, so we'll do that. I'm not sure where we're going to head today, but let's try Bill in Homosassa first. Bill, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Well, one, I'm so happy you're back.
Well, thanks, Bill.
With all this disheartening politics we got going on nowadays, when they ask you whatever happened, I don't even know. I just was not happy at all. But you're back. So there is, you know, there's always another side, the other side of the coin, if you will. You are back, right?
I am back. I am live. This is not Memorex, yeah.
Yeah, good. Good, good, good. And like I said, I don't know why it went down, but I know it wasn't right. Because I've been, I've not been here since 79, but I've been around a long time, and I've been, you know, I'm one of your bigger supporters. You may not know it, but I am. So, with that, that's all I want to pass along. You do a great job. It wouldn't be right if you wasn't there.
Okay.
Simple as that.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Bill, thanks a lot. Thanks for welcoming me back. Thank you. 813-239-9663. I'd plan to talk about Amendment 4 today. I don't think that's going to work out. I was going to try to get a guest on today, and looks like that is not going to work out. Amendment 4, of course, is the amendment that was overwhelmingly passed by Florida voters last November that would extend almost, at least the backers thought, automatic voting rights to ex-felons who had served their sentences, except in the case of murder or sex crimes. The legislature has stepped in and wants to roll it back a bit. They're now saying that in addition to serving their sentences, they must pay all related court costs. Sometimes a judge will assess court costs to people who are sent to prison. And sometimes it's hard for people who are sent to prison once they come out to find a good paying job and then fulfill the court cost portion of what the judge directed them to do. The question is, are is the sentence that the judge hands down, are court costs considered part of the sentence? Now, I've heard from all sides on that. Some people say yes, some people say no. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Gary in Dunedin, who asks the question, why hasn't impeachment begun? And Gary, welcome to WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Yeah, it's gotten to the point where I wonder, were we misled when we were younger that this country is a country governed by the rule of law and the Constitution? I mean, it's well past time where it should be obvious to everyone that high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed. The Mueller report, which, if you'll remember, Trump first said he's fine with the whole thing being released. Now, only a few days later, he's saying it should not be released. But even what we already know indicates that the president has lied repeatedly, that there were back-channel communications with Russia to the benefit of Trump's campaign. And that's just one of many things. The security clearance scandal, in which he overrules career intelligence officers and White House ethics officers to give security clearances to people that shouldn't have them. How about something that isn't being reported hardly at all? The illegal covert transfer of nuclear weapons grade materials to the sponsor of the Wahhabi terrorism in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, by Rick Perry, in violation of law. These are just a few of the things. And when I see that Clinton was impeached for a consensual sexual affair in the White House and lying about it once under oath, and I notice the other times when politicians have been run out of office or forced to resign, like Nixon, who only authorized a third-rate burglary and covered it up, and yet Pelosi and Schumer, I just don't understand. Have we crossed a certain point in our country where there really isn't any standards of accountability for the highest officials? Do we have a monarchy? Because by any stretch of the imagination, there should be impeachment proceedings going on. It's very worrisome and depressing that you see the president's supporters never really say that he didn't do the stuff he's accused of. And he himself has been caught in so many lies on tape, but yet he's still there. And I'll tell you the damage he's doing, Rob. Just his gutting of clean air and clean water regulations, selling off our national monuments to the industries that destroy them, gutting the National Park Service. If he's not removed or hobbled soon, there will be no way to repair what he's doing. So I'd like for people to weigh in on what's happened to our country. If you or I committed a crime, Rob, and we got caught, we would be held accountable. Why not Trump?
Well, Gary, you raise a lot of good points, and we're going to put those thoughts on hold because our guest has called in. So,
great.
Gary,
well, I have a great show, and thanks.
Okay, thanks, Gary. And Gary's point about selling nuclear technology, I think that's the story, selling nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia so they could proceed to build their own nuclear weapons. The Trump administration is engaged in that right now. Now, do you think Saudi Arabia should be put on the path to building its own nuclear weapons? We've just taken the first steps in that direction, and as Gary said, the energy secretary has just done that. Is that okay with you? Well, let's put that thought on hold for a little bit, and let's talk about Amendment 4. The state legislature is moving to limit the restoration of voting rights to felons who have served their sentences. Last November, Florida voters overwhelmingly passed Amendment 4, which backers say automatically restores voting rights for felons who have completed their sentences, except in the case of those who have committed murder or sex crimes. Last week, a subcommittee in the House approved a bill that requires felons to pay any outstanding financial obligations, including court costs, fees, and fines, before their voting rights would be restored. And the question being raised is, are court costs and fees part of the sentence? And we're going to talk about that with Darrell Paulson, who is a professor emeritus of government at USF in St. Petersburg, and he is the co-author of a book about Groveland called Groveland, Florida's Little Scottsboro. He's also written extensively on race relations and civil rights in Florida, and until recently, he was a Republican. So let's bring up Professor Darrell Paulson on. Darrell, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, good morning, Rob.
So what do you think about the legislature's efforts to roll back Amendment 4?
Not very much, and not very positive. The legislature is continuing to do what the voters of Florida don't want them to do, and that's to meddle in the amendment process. The voters, I think, quite clearly knew what they were voting for last November. They approved Amendment 4 by 64%, overwhelming margin. And they had clarity on what they were doing. They were giving felons a second chance, which is what this proposal does. And what the legislature is now doing is putting in new conditions that weren't part of the process. Even the people who drafted Amendment 4, Howard Simon of the ACLU in particular, who drafted the language of this, said the language is so clear and unambiguous and self-executing that there wasn't anything needed to be done. There wasn't any interpretation that needed to be added. But we've seen this constant pattern, whether it's medical marijuana or some of the environmental issues that have been passed in the amendment process in recent years. And either the legislature does not do what the voters of Florida wanted them to do, or they put new conditions on these proposals that clearly the voters of Florida did not expect, did not anticipate, do not want, and it's counterproductive. And quite frankly, the only thing that's going to be accomplished is it's going to delay this process for many Floridians who want to vote. And it's going to be very expensive because if the legislature continues on this course of action, you're likely going to go before the Florida Supreme Court and perhaps even the U.S. Supreme Court, who will deal with this issue and whether or not you can impose fees to be able to vote. And certainly the United States Supreme Court has been quite clear on this over the years, especially with respect to the poll tax issue, which the United States Supreme Court struck down as an invidious qualification for voting. The right to vote should not be conditioned on a person's economic condition or status. And I would be 99.5% sure that the Supreme Court would rule the same way if, in fact, this ever comes before the court.
Wait a minute. Let me just get that clear, because this is one of the big issues about why the legislature is moving in this direction. You're saying that the definition of a poll tax from the U.S. Supreme Court is what?
The poll tax has already outlawed the poll tax, and the poll tax was, in fact, Florida was the first state to adopt the poll tax. Not exactly a shining star on Florida's legislative or racial history. Florida adopted the poll tax in 1889. We were the first state. We imposed a $2 state fee. Some local jurisdictions imposed their own fee. Florida abolished its poll tax in the late 1930s, but it wasn't until 1950s and 1960s, partially by a Supreme Court case, which struck down the poll tax in federal election, and then the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which struck down the poll tax in certain state elections, that the poll tax was finally abolished in the 1960s, 1964. The Ogden decision of the Supreme Court put an end to the poll tax. In that decision, the court said you cannot impose a financial burden on the right to vote. It is a qualification that is not in the Constitution. It is a qualification that violates the Equal Protection Clause because it makes the wealth of a particular individual a condition of their being able to vote. And so they simply struck it down as a violation of the Equal Protection Clause.
Well, I do think that's key to this discussion. And, of course, the pushback from people that want to change the Amendment 4, at least want to limit Amendment 4, they say John Mills, the constitutional scholar who helped Howard Simon and helped the others write this amendment, testify before the Florida Supreme Court, and he said, look, I want the ex-felons to pay all their court costs. That's what I intend in writing this amendment. And he said that to the Florida Supreme Court and in explaining the amendment to them prior to it being passed by the voters last November. So the supporters of Rolling Back Amendment 4 point to John Mills and say, well, Mills supported the idea of paying all court costs.
Yeah, but what they do and what they oftentimes do is to take a sentence made by somebody like John Mills, who was a supporter of Amendment 4, and quite frankly take it out of context. The hearing that was done in May of 2017 on which the legislature has issued this video of Mills and his quotation on this was very limited in its scope, and the court was dealing with a specific issue at that point in time. If you look at the other language and you look at the language itself of Amendment 4, it seems to many people to be quite clear. It says, upon completion of all terms of sentences, including parole and probation, that individuals would have the right to vote. It doesn't say anything about paying court costs and other kinds of things. And quite frankly, you have a condition which has existed for a long time. Republicans have had a long-standing dispute with the Florida court system, in part because it was basically the only institution of Florida government that was not controlled by the Republicans until recently. And the retirements that recently happened and the appointments by Governor DeSantis now that have shifted the balance of the court more in a conservative or Republican direction. So the Florida legislature, controlled by Republicans, was very upset at numerous decisions coming down from the what they consider to be the liberal Florida court. And they've always tried to find ways to get back at them. And one way is to cut their funding. And so they've constantly lowered the legislative support for the court system. And they've transferred that burden, quite frankly, onto the citizens of the state of Florida and individuals who come to the court system and make them pay these, in some cases, outrageous court costs that are much larger than many other states would impose on individuals. So, to me, it's more a political justification than anything else. I don't see any legal justification for what the court wants to do here.
We're talking about the efforts to roll back Amendment 4 with Darrell Paulson, who is a professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. He's written extensively about race relations and civil rights here in Florida, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So do you think, I mean, let's just assume that because the new makeup of the Florida Supreme Court is much more conservative than last year's court, that this issue would lose in Tallahassee at the Florida Supreme Court level. Would somebody bringing a case saying, look, I've been denied my rights to vote because I didn't pay my court costs, would they have a good appeal? Could they go to the U.S. Supreme Court and look at that poll tax decision from 40 or 50 years ago and say, I'm using that to try to undo what the legislature is doing in Tallahassee?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're two issues that the Florida court will have to deal with it if it gets to the court. And that is, was this the intent of the people who framed Amendment 4 to require individuals to pay all of these fees when, in fact, it doesn't mention it? It only talked about parole and probation in Amendment 4. And they're putting on conditions that weren't really attached to the Amendment 4 issue. Voters did see that when they went into the voting booth. It didn't say these individuals are going to have to pay court costs. It's something now that the legislature is imposing and say, obviously, this is the case. They have to pay all of these fees. So that's going to be one issue. Was that the intent of the people who proposed this, and was that a justified request? The second issue is the constitutional one. Can you require individuals to pay a fee in order to be able to vote? And as I said, the courts have already dealt with that in the past. They would either have to overturn their precedent in the poll tax case or find some other way to justify that individuals would have to pay a fee. And, of course, this is much more onerous than the poll tax, which was a $2 fee that had to be paid. in the state of Florida. Now, of course, blacks were the ones least able to pay a $2 fee when this was imposed in 1889. I mean, $2 was, by today's comparison, probably equal to $20. So it was a lot of money. But now you're talking on court costs. I mean, this can reach the hundreds of dollars. And is that a fair condition to impose, that you have to pay hundreds of dollars simply to get the right to vote? I would have a hard time saying either the Florida Supreme Court, quite frankly, even though they're more conservative, and certainly the United States Supreme Court, saying, yeah, it's fair to make you pay hundreds of dollars in court fees that weren't part of the amendment in the first place in order to be able to vote. I just don't see how it's going to pass constitutional muster.
And one more question, Daryl. Not every ex-felon is an African-American. In fact, most ex-felons are either white or Hispanic, not African-American. But here in Florida, and indeed across the South, there's a long history of trying to suppress the vote of African-Americans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Florida was a deep South state, and Florida's population at the time most of these voting barriers were imposed, Florida was a much different state then than it is now. As late as 1900, 45% of Florida's population was African-American. And you can quite clearly see what happened when Reconstruction ended and the Florida conservative Florida legislature imposed all of these burdens on black voters. Black voters were virtually eliminated from the state of Florida within a period of 5 to 10 years. And there were virtually less than 5% blacks registered to vote in the state of Florida. As recently as 1960, only 3% of blacks were registered to vote in the state of Florida. 1940, 3% were registered. 1960 in Gadsden County, a majority black county in North Florida, you had, can't remember the exact number, but you had an overwhelming number of blacks in that county, and there were only 7 of the blacks who were registered to vote. So these barriers were quite effective, and they accomplished what was intended, and that was to eliminate black votes. One final point, I think I have to say, both parties bear some guilt and responsibility here. Democrats clearly wanted Amendment 4 because they saw a political benefit. They believe that most of these individuals would vote for Democratic candidates. Republicans opposed Amendment 4 primarily for the same reason, but they saw there was a political benefit to the Democrats. My position is that neither party has justified Amendment 4 on the basis of, is it a good public policy? Should we give voters a second chance? Studies have shown, and the largest study ever done was in Florida, of recidivism, that if you give people the right to vote, they are far less likely to return to prison. And in Florida, the numbers were about a third of the people who were felons returned to prison after a period of time. But if their civil rights were restored, it was less than 10% that went back to prison. So there's a sound reason to do it. And my argument is we ought to do this policy because it's the right policy to do, not because one party is going to benefit and the other party is going to lose out because of this.
Mm. Daryl, just to go back so people can look it up themselves, U.S. Supreme Court decision that outlawed poll taxes, was that Harper versus Virginia State Board of Elections? Or 1966?
Yeah, that's the one that outlawed it I'm trying to think if that was the state or the federal elections. Yeah, but the 24th Amendment that outlawed it in federal elections. But the Harper case was the one that then ended it in state elections. Because once you said you can't use a poll tax in federal elections, the state still said, well, we can use it in our state and local elections. And so it was a two-pronged attack, both through the constitutional amendment and through a Supreme Court decision that you ultimately eliminated the poll tax by the mid-1960s. 1966 was the end date, officially, of the poll tax in the United States.
Well, Daryl Paulson, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us and talking about the efforts to roll back Amendment 4. Great to talk to you, Daryl.
Anytime. And I just hope this thing goes through. I hope the legislators see the right thing to do. And I'm concerned with the vote that took place in the legislature because it was strictly a partisan vote. And once again, that's not a good thing for the state of Florida. It's not a good thing for the country when all the Republicans are on one side and all the Democrats are on the other side. And it's just not good public policy.
Yeah,
let the best candidates and the best policy and let the best party win.
And Darrell, I said at the beginning of the show you're a former Republican. You're now a registered independent, right?
That's true.
Yeah, okay.
And one of the reasons I left the Republican Party was because of their opposition to Amendment 4. The Republican Party never came out and took a position against it, but it was quite clear that most Republicans strongly opposed it, and opposed it only because they saw a partisan disadvantage for them and were concerned about what would happen in future elections in Florida. And my argument is the party ought to be doing the right thing. And I can see nothing more conservative. There's one thing that conservatives and liberals ought to be able to agree on, is that we ought to give every American who wants to and has not committed some atrocious felony like a murder or a rape, give every person in America who wants to the right to vote and let the parties convince them to vote for their party. And that would be the proper thing to do, but too much of it is, once again, still based on, because it's become so politicized, it's become a political issue rather than doing the right thing kind of issue.
Yeah, and Darrell, you're still a proud conservative.
I still consider myself a conservative because I think there's nothing more conservative than protecting the right to vote.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to argue with anybody, but it's not a conservative position.
All right. Well,
as I said, it's also a liberal position, so they ought to be able to find one piece that they can agree on. And so I'm hoping it's this.
All right, Darrell, great to talk to you, and I learned a whole lot just by listening to you for the last 20 minutes. Thank you for coming on M&F.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
All right, thanks. That's Darrell Paulson, who's a professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. He's written extensively about civil rights here in Florida, and he's also the co-author of a book about Groveland called Groveland, Florida's Little Scottsboro. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to open up the phone lines. Take your phone calls right now at 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. The 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution prohibited poll taxes in federal elections, but there were some five states that continued to require poll taxes for voters in state elections. So then came this case, Harper versus Virginia, in which the U.S. Supreme Court found that Virginia's poll tax, the state poll tax, was unconstitutional under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and prohibited the state poll tax. So it's got an interesting history, and I think Darrell's point about that U.S., about both the 24th Amendment and the Harper versus Virginia State Board of Elections, that is key, because as I've been reading the coverage about Amendment 4, I haven't seen those two issues mentioned. And this issue about financial burden seems to be key, too. So let's see if the legislature pays attention to what the U.S. Supreme Court says and what the U.S. Constitution says. Let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Craig in Sarasota, who's been holding for a while, wants to talk about Amendment 4. Craig, thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Rob. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
WMNF made a real good decision to keep you on board.
Thank you.
Just for a little clarification, this poll tax we're talking about, that is currently in effect in Florida, right? I mean, there is that they're charging that for
well, there's a big debate right now. We passed Amendment 4. Florida voters passed Amendment 4 last November. The backers of Amendment 4 said it executes itself, it implements itself automatically. So for any elections that have been held since August or since November of last year, local supervisors of elections have essentially signed up anybody who was an ex-felon, as long as they didn't commit murder or as long as they didn't weren't involved in a sex crime. Now the state legislature is moving in, and they're not finished with their business up there in Tallahassee, but a move to roll back Amendment 4 to say, before you can register to vote, you've got to pay all your court costs. That legislation is moving ahead in both the House and the Senate. We don't know if it's going to pass ultimately, and we don't know if the governor is going to sign it ultimately, although it's likely If it came to his desk, he would sign it. But it hasn't passed yet. So if you're, not saying you are, but if anybody's an ex-felon out there, right now, as long as they didn't commit a sex crime or a murder, they can register to vote. The legislature is trying to change
that. I think it would be reasonable to ask ex-felons to pay a small fee, something across the board that basically just about anybody could afford. I mean, that numbers would be up in the air, of course. But having had two relatives recently in the prison system, I can tell you that in both of those cases, there are unbelievable costs when you're already in prison. You would not believe how much money gets spent not only to be in prison, but just to get out. So anybody that's been incarcerated would tell you that they've paid a boatload of money just by being in the system. So to let people, I mean, to make people pay again when they get out, that, you know, potentially very large court costs and fees, and this just doesn't seem fair. I think it'd be reasonable to have a small fee where everybody could relatively afford and say, look, you pay that, then you're free to vote.
How easy for these two people that you know, how easy it was it for them to find a job once they got out?
Well, one, not easy at all. The other one was young enough to where he could get back into society and get a good job. The other one is into her probably almost 60 by now. So it definitely affected her in a big way. So my point there is she spent unbelievable amounts of money when she was in the system for this or that. You can imagine what had to be paid for. It's just unbelievable.
All right. So, Craig, you say a small fee, but not one that would be a big burden to those people who are leaving prison.
That's right.
Okay.
Something across the board, just kind of satisfy everybody and let people move on and let them vote and get on with their lives.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot. Thanks for your views. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm going to just read from that court case, the Harper, Virginia court case about poll taxes. The court noted that a state violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution whenever it makes the affluence of the voter or payment of any fee an electoral standard. Voter qualifications have no relation to wealth. So it would seem that, and you can look up the case yourself, and I'll just give you the name of the case. It's Harper versus Virginia State Board of Elections, and it was a case handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1966. So if you have, if you want to look it up yourself and you can read it, it's a much longer case than that sentence I just, or those two sentences I just read to you. But it would seem like, at least when it came to the Harper decision, you cannot impose a payment of any fee as an electoral standard. Now, I'm not a lawyer. And so we'll continue this conversation, I'm sure, especially if the legislature ultimately passes this rollback of Amendment 4. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go to Jim in Tampa. Jim, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Just first like to say welcome back.
Good to be back. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, the caller, your guest was spot on, you know, about the legislature and, you know, the reinterpretation of what Florida voters voted in verbatim, word by word. You know, he brings up the, you know, obviously the medical marijuana thing. That's 2 years ago, and they're still screwing around with that. Combined with, you know, last election's bundling of amendments and, you know, giving people the choice not to be able to make a decision because there are two different things being talked about with two different answers and give you two to four different results is just insane. I think overall the Florida, the legislature and the people of Florida need to stand up on the whole amendment process.
Yeah, you know, there's a long tradition too. Land conservation, the legislature ignored what the voters said about land conservation that we passed just a few years ago. Education, making it a high priority, that's in the Florida Constitution. They've kind of ignored that. The lottery was supposed to be used to enhance education. It didn't enhance it. They just put the lottery money into the general revenue. So there's a case after case after case where the legislature in Tallahassee, which might as well be in lower Alabama, ignores what the people in the rest of the state say. They go up to Tallahassee. They meet largely away from the public eye, although there's some good newspaper reporting about it. And then they do things that none of us really intended.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's what needs to be addressed, the implementation and execution of amendments that Florida voters approve.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Thank you. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Mike, who's in North Carolina. Mike, what's your question or comment? Mike? Mike in North Carolina?
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Mike.
Watch out now, casting aspersions on lower Alabama.
Are you from Alabama, Mike?
You know I am.
All right.
I'm Redneck Riviera born. Rob, I think that, you know, I'm saddest. First of all, I am in favor of restoring the voting rights of felons. You know, make note of that. But I feel like your guest and you and that Supreme Court decision, you are conflating two different things as far as the fees go. I haven't lived a squeaky clean existence like you, Mr. Lori, and having been involved in the justice system, I found that if you do not pay your probation fees, or if you're sent to counseling like DUI school, if you don't pay those fees, then you are in violation of probation and there's a bench warrant out for you. So I feel like these probation fees that we're discussing are way different than a poll tax. A poll tax purely would be charging people to vote. This is just simply asking people to pay off probation fees the way I'm reading it, and I see the fix as being giving them amnesty for the fees. Then that would clear this issue.
Well, that might be one way to do it. I don't think that's the way the legislature is heading. Mike, let me say something really radical. What do you think about felons and ex-felons and people in prison being allowed to vote, as they are in many countries, places like Israel, places like Canada, Peru? You're allowed to vote. There's probably two dozen countries where people who are in the criminal justice system are not denied the right to vote. Does it make any sense for us to penalize people who are in prison or maybe in the criminal justice system in jail, denying them the right to vote?
You know, I would not be against that. It's just my statement today is that the Republicans have found a clever loophole because they are, you can't conflate a probation fee with a poll tax. I mean, they're two separate distinct fees.
Well, Mike, to make the argument back, though, if the only thing that is holding that person back from voting is the $1,000 court cost that the judge might have assessed at the end of the trial and the imposition of the sentence, if the only thing that's holding that person back from legally being able to vote isn't that essentially a poll tax?
Well, my take on that is that if that person showed up to vote, he would be arrested because there's a bench warrant out for violation of probation.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thanks. Thanks for your views.
All right, Rob. Thank
all right.
You. Welcome
all right. Good
back,
to hear. All right. Thank you for saying that. Well, if you're an attorney out there who's represented people in criminal cases and you've got something that you'd like to add, we've got an open line at 813-239-9663. BT writes this regarding the Mueller report and the protests this afternoon around the state and around the country calling for the release of the Mueller report. There's one in Straub Park at 5:30 this afternoon. BT writes this, I just checked and I cannot find any news outlet saying that Donald Trump doesn't want the Mueller report released. Plenty have him saying it won't shut his detractors up, but none saying that he doesn't want it released, writes BT. BT, thanks a lot for that. And John in Port Richey writes, I think there should be only two requirements to vote in any state of the union. A person must meet the U.S. constitutional requirements, and a person is a resident of the state they vote in. Keep it simple for our legislators so they cannot undermine the voters. I'm not sure why the amendment that was passed still restricted some felons' right to vote, writes John in Port Richey. And Gina writes this, this thwarting the vote of the people is not honoring our intent on Amendment 4. It's not new that the legislature disregards what so many of us want, writes Gina. And Rael says, isn't it a condition of probation that all fines and court costs must be paid before your probation is complete? I know that when I had a DUI way back in the 90s, I could not get off probation until my fine was paid. Rael, thank you very much for that. And we're getting lots of people emailing on this issue. Hatui writes, the Florida legislature rolling back Amendment 4 and adding these clauses sounds like the kind of political dictatorship we're trying to stop in Venezuela to bring democracy. Interesting. And our democracy is tainted with all too similar actions all throughout our history. Democratic? Writes Hatui. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. We're going to go to Ted in Ellenton. Ted, you're on. What would you like to say? Hey, Ted. Ted, you're on. All right. Ted may be gone. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, you're on MNF.
Hey, Rob. Great program. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, as somebody that's lived in states where the amendment process seems to go smoothly and is not interfered with by the legislature, I got a question, and that is, what's the difference? You know, what is the difference between, like, Oregon or California or any of the number of these states that pass, you know, you could take any example, whether it's, you know, medical marijuana or, you know, even regular sales, what do you call it, recreational sales of marijuana. The states out west don't seem to have the problem that we have here in Florida of the, you know, the voters vote one way, and then obviously, it's just my opinion, but they do seem like the legislators here in Florida have shown a consistent disdain for the will of the voters, and it just, I'm just sitting here trying to scratch my head and figure out why? You know, what's the...
Well, there is something that links a lot of the amendments that we're talking about. If we're talking about extending voting rights, or if we're talking about land conservation and the environment, if we're talking about education or lottery or protecting farm animals, there's a thread related to all of these, and these are ideas that tend to lean toward the liberal side, right?
You're right. That's true.
You've got a really still, even despite the fair vote amendments, you've got a gerrymandered legislature. It doesn't truly reflect the number of Democrats, independents, and Republicans that live in the state. The legislature is dominated by Republicans. And so, if I could just finish just the first second. Sorry, Kevin.
No.
So, people who are out there who want medical marijuana, for instance, who tend to be more liberal, know that the legislature is not going to do the job for them, or in the case of raising the minimum wage, which we did about 8 years ago, they know the legislature is not going to do the job. So they put these amendments on the ballot to try to do something because they know that the Republicans dominate Tallahassee, even though it's unfair. And they try to get something, an end run around Tallahassee. And then when Tallahassee sees what these mostly liberal groups do, although sometimes conservative amendments are passed, then Tallahassee doesn't like what the liberals are doing, so they try to use their power to roll it back. So,
well, that's, you know, but all I'm saying is then maybe we're requiring an amendment to limit the authority of the legislators from rolling back the people's amendments. I don't know if that's how they do it out west, but it just... Like you say, it is simple in that the conservatives want their way.
Well, when you have a gerrymandered legislature too, they are not afraid of the people. They don't have to be afraid of the people. All they have to do is worry about raising enough money to get reelected, and they're isolated up there in Tallahassee, where there's fewer and fewer newspaper reporters, and certainly almost no TV and almost no radio reporters, except a few intrepid public radio reporters who cover about one-fifth of everything that should be covered in Tallahassee. So they can do almost whatever they want to do up there, and that's part of the reason they do it. Whether or not we could get an amendment there forcing the legislature to listen to the people, I'm not sure how you'd write that, but I think it's a good idea. I'd like to hear what the language would be.
Yeah, let's work on that. That's all I know.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Rob. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori, and we've been talking about Amendment 4, and we're going to go to Marlo in Tampa. Marlo, thank you for calling. How are you?
Yeah, I was just commenting on what Mike said about probation taxes and the difference between that and court fees, which are certainly different. You wouldn't have a bench warrant for not paying court costs. Those just simply sit and wait for you to pay.
So nobody would kind of try to come to arrest you. Yeah.
No, no one would arrest you when you came. And yeah. I work in... Yes, I work in the court system. I've seen people have thousands of dollars in court fees, and be homeless. So it's irrational, and it is certainly discriminatory towards affluent people.
So how do those
your family's affluent? You just pay your court costs off, and you can vote.
So what happens to those homeless people that have racked up lots of court costs?
Court fees just sit. They don't do anything.
They just sit there, But at some point, if that person, that homeless person, comes back into court and faces another charge, does the judge...
They get more court fees.
They get more court fees just added on,
They just add up. You just would have just a ton more
What's the most court fees you've ever seen, let's say, a homeless person assessed?
They end up in the thousands. I mean, but... Because each time you go to court for anything, you're going to get court fees.
Yeah.
You're going to get court fees. You're going to get the public defender fees. You'll get... They're just all sorts of them. Florida's a fee state. So you'll end up with thousands of dollars in court fees, I guess.
So they've really outsourced the cost of government to the defendant.
Well, they don't get paid, though.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't get paid. I see. Yeah. All right, Marlo, thanks a lot. Thanks for the insider view.
Okay.
All right, good to hear from you. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Carrie in St. Petersburg. Hi, Carrie. You're on MNF.
Hi. Yeah, I think the law is pretty clear, and a poll tax by any other name is still a poll tax, and that's what this is. And it is geared to suppress voting by lower-income, probably larger minority people. The rich returning citizens will have no problem paying their fines and fees, but people who are more likely to vote Democrat will be the ones that will have more trouble with their fees. And you combine that with Republicans don't want Democrats to vote, and they don't want to be responsive to the will of the people. They've gerrymandered the districts such that there's a tremendous... tremendous more Republicans in the legislature than Democrats, which is not representative of the people of the state. And now what they're doing, they're even trying to take away the final voice that we have. There is a bill floating around the legislature right now that would make it even harder to have ballot initiatives to get things in the Constitution. It's already pretty hard. We need 60%. But they're trying to make it even harder because they don't want us to have a voice at all. And that is something that is happening in Republican legislatures nationwide right now. It seems that there's a party that just doesn't really believe in democracy.
Why do you think that is, Carrie? Why?
I struggle with that all the time. It seems like we've reached a point where it's just about pure power and corruption. Politics is a big part of it.
But yet, we had Daryl Paulson on, and Daryl is a longtime conservative. He doesn't really tout it, but he's got really good conservative credentials. He's not in favor of voter suppression, and I'm sure there's lots of conservatives like Daryl that don't follow the party line.
Ordinary citizens, yeah. I think voter suppression is an issue that transcends party lines as far as the voters are concerned. But for the big money lobbyists and corporations and the politicians up there that take money from them, it's a whole other story.
Yeah. All right. Carrie, thanks. Thanks for a great call.
Thank you.
And Tony writes this. He's in St. Pete. He says, a great guest on felon voting. One nitpick, his characterization of Florida's Republican-dominated legislature as conservative. No, let's call the legislature what it is, reactionary, writes Tony. He also calls it bordering on fascistic. Many want to get rid of local governance to limit environmental, fair wage, and anti-discrimination laws that are adopted by more liberal cities. They ignore the will of the voters in referendums only because so many Floridians don't bother to vote in off-year elections when so many legislators are on the ballot, writes Tony. That's Tony's view. If you want to agree with Tony, or if you want to disagree with Tony, you can call us up. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663. Lisa writes this, felons do vote in prison. They can do that in Maine and Vermont, writes Lisa. Lisa, thank you for that. Bill Grace is our phone producer today, and let's go to Marlon, who's in Zephyr Hills. Marlon, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Real good. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you? So what would you like to say?
Well, I agree with the last lady that talked. We're not a government of the people anymore. Back after the Parkland shootings, before the last election, there was a televised event where the Parkland people confronted both our senators to their faces. And one of the people point blank asked Rubio, will you accept any more money from the NRA? And if we all paid attention to his response, it should have woke us up. His response was, I have an agenda and people buy into my agenda. Now, that should have clued us in right away that we, the people, are supposed to be represented by these people, but we're not. They all have an agenda and they're for sale. They market themselves and the big money buys them. And I would have wished, with everything I have, that one of these people that night would have said, you know, we're here to represent you, we're going to take your concerns, and we're going to work with them. But no, we have an agenda, and I'm for sale. We're not a government of the people anymore. They say it right to us, and we do nothing about it.
All right, Marlon, thanks a lot. That's an issue we talk a lot about here on WMNF. Let's listen to what Cameron Caskey, one of the Parkland survivors, said to Senator Rubio in that CNN town hall meeting in February of last year.
So, Senator Rubio, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA in the future?
So, number one, the positions I hold on these issues of the Second Amendment, I've held since the day I entered office in the city of West Miami as an elected official. Number two, no, the answer to the question is that people buy into my agenda. And I do support the Second Amendment. And I also support the right of you and everyone here to be able to go to school and be safe. And I do support any law that would keep guns out of the hands of a deranged killer. And that's why I support the things that I have stood for and fought for during my time here.
More NRA money? More NRA money? In the name of 17 people, you cannot ask the NRA to keep their money out of your campaign?
I think in the name of 17 people, I can pledge to you that I will support any law that will prevent a killer like this.
No, but I'm talking NRA money.
No, because...
Matter of fact, I bet we can get people in here to give you exactly as much money as the NRA would have.
But it's not. But ultimately, look, the First Amendment is as important as the Second. And therefore, you have every right to ask that question of me, and I'm here to tell you that I will stand for the things.
Are you going to be accepting money from the NRA in the future?
I will always accept the help of anyone who agrees with my agenda.
Cameron Caskey, one of the Parkland shooting survivors, confronting Senator Marco Rubio, Florida's senior senator now, at that town hall meeting on CNN in February of last year, to Marlon's point. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Let's go to Jerome in Tampa. Jerome, what would you like to say?
Concerning the Amendment 4, I voted yes on it. And honestly, I was under the impression that it was when the sentence was served. So now I don't know where the semantic is about who says what the sentence is. If the court cost is under that, then I think that it should be included. If it's not, then it's not. You know, so I don't know. I was under the impression that it wasn't. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I looked at the language, and the language does not say court cost. It does say sentence, though. And,
right.
And the question is, are court costs part of the sentence, or is that something else?
Correct. And then I want to say also to Mr. Paulson's point, if it is about money and monetary, then if the recidivist facts are correct, and he said, I believe it was something about 33% would return, and then if they do get the chance to vote, it's down to under 10, that there is going to pay by well, because obviously it costs money to put people in jail. That will well substantiate the amount of money that this little poll tax they're trying to save. So I don't think it's about the money that they want. You know, I think it's something else. There's some other type of reason that, you know, underlying that I'm not aware of, that they want to not allow these people to vote. And what I said was allow them to vote. So I don't understand. I don't know.
They're not, yeah, I mean, we want people to reintegrate into society and not be outcasts. And Jerome,
course,
great points.
More.
Yeah, great points. Thank you for making
Thank
them.
You.
Thank you. Regarding one of our earlier emailers, BT, saying that President Trump has not said anything about not releasing the Mueller report. There's an article that one of our listeners sent us from New York Magazine. The headline, it's written by Jonathan Chait. The headline says, White House no longer enthusiastic about releasing Mueller report. So you can look that up yourself in answer to what that emailer, BT, said to us via email just a few minutes ago. And Joe in South Tampa says, there is a simple solution. Quit electing the same people that work against the people's interests, writes Joe in South Tampa. Not always easy because the districts are so gerrymandered. You tend to pack Democrats into the same districts and Republicans into other districts, and you end up with the same kind of legislature over and over again. Well, we're out of time, but if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115. Stay tuned for the Surly Feminists. They're coming up next. We're going to play your comments that you call in on that number tomorrow at 11 o'clock. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. Here's the latest news.